Okay, so we are holding on Chaf Dalet Amud Beis, four lines from the bottom. We started discussing, our Mishnah had said that you're not allowed to use Shemen Tzreifa for Yom Tov candles. We said Shemen Tzreifa is oil of Truma that's been tameh, where the only thing you can do with it is burn it. And as the Gemara has been discussing, have Hanah from it. So you would be allowed to use it for, you'd be allowed to use it normally for lighting, to have Hanah from it while you're burning it, but you can't use it on Yom Tov. We discussed previously in the Gemara two possible reasons. Here the Gemara just takes one reason, which is Rav Chisda's reason, that it's talking specifically for Yom Tov or when Yom Tov comes out on Friday, in the case for Shabbos candles, because you're not allowed to burn Kodshim on Yom Tov. And the Gemara is assuming over here, that when we say that you can't burn Kodshim on Yom Tov, then it means also Truma. Actually, Tosfos discusses over here that not necessarily do all the Amoraim that we're quoting over here agree with that. Some of them may say that the din applies only to Kodshim, at least on a Daraisa level, but not to Truma. Some of them might say that it applies only Dirabanan to Truma. Anyway. But of course, Kodshim, everybody agrees that it is Daraisa. So we're trying to figure out what is the source for that? What is the source for that you're not allowed to burn Kodshim on Yom Tov? So far we have two reasons. We have Chizkiah's reason that he learned it from a pasuk about burning the Korban Pesach, where the pasuk says an extra ad boiker, implying that even though already on the morning of the first day Pesach, you're already also to eat the Korban Pesach because the deadline for eating it was Chatzos, or Alois HaShachar, according to the different opinion. Nevertheless, you can't burn it that day. You have to wait till the next day, which is the first day Chol Moed. We brought Abaya's reason that he learned from the pasuk Olas Shabbos for Shabbat, that from that we learn that you're not allowed to burn the leftover pieces of Korbanos of weekdays on Shabbos or on Yom Tov. And if you can't burn those, then you certainly can't burn Kodshim that became Tomei. So now we're going to continue with more reasons, more psukim. Rava says like this, Omar Kra, like this, the pasuk says, as far as Malacha on Yom Tov, Hu Levado Ye'ose Lochem. The pasuk says that this is where we learn that you're allowed to do Malachas Eichel Nefesh on Yom Tov. The pasuk says, any Malacha that's necessary for food, Hu Levado Ye'ose Lochem. It alone shall be done for you. Now the words Hu and Levado are extra. It could have just said, Achashe Ye'ochel Lochem Nefesh Ye'ose Lochem. So what do we learn from those extra words, Hu and Levado? So Rava says, Hu means Volei Machshir. And from the word Hu, which is a miut, meaning only the actual malachas oichol nefesh themselves, but not prerequisites for it. Let's say, for example, Rashi says, a person doesn't have an oven, or a person doesn't have a spit for roasting, or whatever, they're not allowed to make one on Yom Tov. Once you already have the oven, or the spit, or the knife, or whatever made, then you can use it for malachas oichol nefesh on Yom Tov. But you can't make one to begin with, saying, well, I need that in order to cook or bake or whatever for Yom Tov. That we learn from the word Hu. And Levado, and when we look, the word Levado is also a mute, means V'loy Mila Shalom Yizmana Da'asya B'Kav HaChomer. Means, we learn from that you can't do a Mila, Bris Mila, on Shabbos or Yom Tov when it's not in the right, on Yom Tov here we're talking about, when it's not in the right time, when it's not on the eighth day. Now we know a bris on the eighth day is Doicha Shabbos and is Doicha Yom Tov, but when it's not on the eighth day, then it's not. And you actually have the Gemara later on in the 19th parak of Amasechta, which is all about the dinim of Bris Mila, the Gemara tries to make a Kavachomer over there, to ask him a Kavachomer, you would have otherwise thought to learn it out with a Kavachomer, namely Rashi brings from the Gemara over there a possible Kavachomer that we would have made to allow Mila anytime, even whether on the eighth day or not, on Yom Tov. The Kavachomer basically goes like this. We say that the Avodah in the Bais Hamikdash is more important, the Saras is more important than the Avodah, because we see that a person with Saras is not able to do the Avodah. On the other hand, we see that, the Avodah is more important than Shabbos, because you do the avodah even when that involves things that otherwise would be malachas on Shabbos. So that being the case, then then if we know that Sarah, we know that we know that Mila is more important. We know that Mila is more important than Saras, because you do a bris mila even if there's Saras on the orla. Normally, you have an issur to cut away signs of Saras. Normally, a person has Saras, they're not allowed to cut away the signs of it or the hairs or whatever. But here, where there's Saras there, then that's an exception, and you are allowed to. So therefore, so putting all of that together, we would have thought that maybe Mila, given that Mila is even more important than Saras, which is even more important than Avoda, and Avoda overrides Shabbos, you would think that maybe Saras also should override Shabbos, whether it's on the eighth day or not. And the Gemara explains over there that we don't use that Kavachomer, but we learn that, Rava says, from this word over here, Levade. Otherwise, we would have used that Kavachomer and said that Saras is in fact, no, not Saras, but Mila is in fact Doicha Shabbos, whether it's on the eighth day or not. Tosfos discusses over here, that's not actually the Kavachomer the Gemara is talking about, because in fact, Rava himself slugs up that Kavachomer over there. So Tosfos talks about various other possibilities. One of them being that the Kav HaChomer instead might be that you're allowed to do Melechus Eichel Nefesh, which is of course much less important than Mila. So surely you should be able to do Mila. Anyway, Tosfos also brings that you can make a Kav HaChomer from Nedarim and Nedavos. You're allowed to bring voluntary korbanos on Yom Tov, again, even though they're less important than bris mila. Whatever, the point is that, in other words, we would have had a Kav HaChomer to say that you do a bris mila on Yom Tov, even if it's not on the eighth day, and therefore Rava says you need the word levado to tell us not. So once we have that, then automatically that means, so in general, the rule is going to be, any mitzvah which it's not, there's not a particular day that you need to do it, is not doicha Yom Tov. Therefore, that is why, ultimately, we're saying Mila is not Doicha Yom Tov, because when it's on the eighth day, then that's different. That's the proper time to do it, so it is Doicha. But other than that, if it's already the ninth day or whatever, there's no particular advantage, really, to doing it the ninth day versus the tenth or the eleventh, etc. So therefore, already, it's not Doicha Yom Tov. By the same thing, as far as burning kodshim, same thing. You don't have to burn them today. Once they're possible, you can burn them any day. So what we're saying is, based on that levado, just like we're saying that bris mila after the eighth day is not doicha yom tov, the same way burning kodshim is not doicha yom tov.
But we didn't use this word levado to know that the mila has to be on the eighth day, and if
it's not to teach us the mila has to be on the eighth day. It teaches us that only that if mila is not on the eighth day, then you don't do it on yom tov. That you do it on the eighth day. The Gemara learns later on. In the 19th Perek from Sukkim, that you do it on the 8th day, even if it's on Shabbos or even if it's on Yom Tov. But we're saying, once we said that, we would have thought to say, well, the same thing, it should be done on Shabbos or Yom Tov, even if it's after the 8th day.
Why?
And we would have,
why would you have thought that?
We just said we would have thought to make a Kav HaChomer. Either Rashi mentions the whole Kav HaChomer involving Saras and the Avoda, or Tosfos mentions a couple of other possibilities of Kav HaChomer from Oichel Nefesh or from the Dorim and Adavis or whatever. Whatever the case, we would have thought, based on a Kav HaChomer, that you do a bris mila on Yom Tov, regardless what day it is. But now we're saying the word levado tells us don't do that.
I don't understand the logic. The logic of the Torah is
like this. Once we said that Mila is Doicha Yom Tov, when it's on the eighth day, we would have thought, okay, so in general, Mila is Doicha Yom Tov, whether it's the eighth day or not.
Why? And why would you sort of thing like that?
Again, we would have said a Kav HaChomer. We just said Rashi and Tosfos brought various possible Kav HaChomers that we might have used to say that. That we would have said, for example, taking one of Tosfos's, for example, Tosfos Shonim actually, is if you're allowed to do Melechus Eichel Nefesh on Yom Tov, which is far less important than Mila. Mila, we know there are 13 brisim in connection with it, 13 times in connection with bris Mila when Hashem gives the mitzvah to Abraham in the first place, 13 times it says in the Sukkim over there the word bris. So Mila is a very, very important thing. And nevertheless, So malachas oichel nefesh, to do malacha for food is far less important than that. And yet we say you're allowed to do malacha for food. So how much more so you should be able to do for bris milah? So no, the word levadai comes and tells us that's not so. That's it. So Rava says, therefore, that means, in other words, that establishes a principle that when you have a mitzvah that does not have a zman kavua, that it's not doicha yamzu. So milah on the eighth day, which has a zman kavua, that is doicha yamzu. But once you pass the eighth day, and it's not, then it's not zman kavua anymore, because there's no particular day after that when you have a mitzvah of doing bris milah more than any other, then that's doicha yamzu. By the same token, then, burning kodshim is the same thing, because burning kodshim is the same thing. There's no particular day that you have to do it. You have a mitzvah to burn the kodshim, but you don't just have to do it today. You can do it tomorrow. Okay.
Well, but that's not the same as milah, because milah has to be done on the eighth day, and kodshim do not have to be done at a certain day.
But
how do you compare both?
We're talking after the eighth day. After the eighth day has passed, there's no particular day when you have to do the bris milah. Kodshim, fine. To begin with, you don't have a particular day. The difference is that Kodshim, you don't have a particular day to begin with, whereas Bris Milah, you do. But once the eighth day has passed, then Milah and burning Kodshim are on the same level. That's what Rava is telling us. Okay, next, let's go on. Rav Ashi Omer, Shabbos Shabbosain. Rav Ashi says like this. By every one of the Yamim Tovim, the Torah uses the word Shabbosain, which means Esther. That the word Shabbosain, now each of the Yom Tovim, the Torah tells us a loisas. Komolechas avoda loisasu. Rav Ashi points out by each one of them, it also says Shabbosain, that it has to be a day of rest, which means Esther. That means you have an Esther rest from work on that day, with the exception of Molechas Eichel Nefesh. Bahavala Yom Tov Esther veloisas. Therefore, it comes out that not doing Molechas on Yom Tov involves an Esther and a loisas. And we know a general rule that ein esther doicher loisas ve'esther. We have a general rule that an esther does not override a loisas and an esther. So therefore, in other words, you have an esther, so you have a mitzvah saseh to burn kodshim that became tamei, but that doesn't override the loisas plus the esther of yom tov, where you have a mitzvah saseh to rest on yom tov and a mitzvah loisas and not to do work. So therefore, and that's how it is, by the way. The Rambam, when the Rambam lists the mitzvahs at the beginning of Yad HaChazaka and before each section of Halachas, so when the Rambam gets to Hilchot Yom Tov, so he lists over there, you have six Yom Tovim, you have the first day and last day of Pesach, Shavuos, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Tov Darais that we're talking about, first and last days of Pesach is two, Shavuos is three, Rosh Hashanah is four, first day of Sukkot is five, and Shmini Atzeres is six. And each one of them, that Rambam says, you have an esther to rest on it, and a lois esther not to work on it. The 12 mitzvahs altogether. So therefore, that's what Rav Ashi is telling us, that you have an esther and a lois esther involved, and therefore the esther of burning kodshim on Yom Tov can't override that. So Tosfos earlier asked the question. I mean, so what's the logic though? If we're saying, as we're going to discuss now in the Gemara, that you're allowed to have enough of it, then why is it any worse than any other kind of burning that you are allowed to do on Yom Tov? And Tosfos gives one explanation that since actually the Torah, Tosfos learns. Now Rashi learns differently. Rashi learns that you're allowed to destroy Terumah, that's Tomei, using any way. It doesn't just have to be burning. But Tosfos learns that it just has to be burning. So therefore, the only thing you're allowed to do with Truma or Kodshim that are Tomei is burn them. But therefore, you're not really doing it for the sake of your Hanah. You're essentially doing it for the mitzvah of burning. Meanwhile, the Torah is saying, while you're burning it, you're able to have Hanah from it. And since, as Rav Ashi is saying over here, an Esther is not Doicha, Loisa, San, an Esther, so therefore, you would be allowed to burn regular things on Yom Tov. But you are allowed to, but you're not allowed to burn truma or kodshim that became tamei on Yom Tov. Okay. So we have four reasons. We have four different psukim from which we see this concept that we don't burn kodshim on Yom Tov. And again, Tosfos discusses maybe on a daraisa level that applies to truma as well, based on the logic that we just quoted, or maybe not. Maybe midaraisa it only applies to kodshim, and only midrabbanan it applies to truma. Okay. Continues the Gemara. So what's the implication of everything we've been saying so far? So you're not allowed to burn truma or kodshim that became tamei on Yom Tov. implying at least when it comes to truma that on weekdays it's fine to have hana from truma while you're burning it. So now we have to discuss how do we know where do we see that? Where do we see that when you're burning truma tnea that you should be allowed to have hana from it? Now, why would we think that not? Tosfos says because maybe you have a hekesh of a hekesh that truma is similar to maisa sheni, and maisa sheni you're not allowed to have hana from it when it's tamei. So maybe you would think truma is the same thing. So why not? Omar Rav, so Rav says like to shame shem mitzvah lister of hakodshim shenitmu. First of all, just like there is a mitzvah to burn kodshim that became tamei, kach mitzvah lister of hatruma shenitmu. Similarly, you have a mitzvah to burn truma that became tamei. The Omra Torah, the Shas Biyora, Tehani Vimena, and the Torah is telling us that that at the time you're burning it, while you're burning it, you are allowed to have hana from it. So now we're going to discuss how exactly we know that, but the point is, you have that basic concept that the Torah is telling you that when you're burning truma, you're allowed to have hana from it. Actually, Rashba asked the question, why are we even bringing in the statement of Rab? The essential point that we want, that you're allowed to have hana from it, that we're going to be bringing from Rab Nachman and from Rab Yechanan and from various Amiroi and how we know that you're allowed to have hana from it. What Rab is saying over here, the fact that you have a mitzvah, just like you have a mitzvah to burn kodshim, so you have a mitzvah to burn truma, doesn't really seem to be relevant over here. It doesn't really seem to be adding anything to us. The Rashba asks the question. So various achronim talk about various possible answers. One of them is Knei Yeshua says, based on what we quoted before from Tosfos, that the whole point is, you have the essential thing is you have a mitzvah to burn it. And meanwhile, the Torah is saying, by the way, while you're burning it, I'm going to allow you to have hana from it. So without this statement of Rav, you would think, if you were just told that you're allowed to have hana from it, then you would be back to Tosfos' point. Well, if you're allowed to have hana from it, then why is it different than burning any other firewood on Yom Tov, which is allowed? Therefore, we have to have Rav telling us it's actually a mitzvah. In other words, the essential thing is a mitzvah. By the way, as a side effect, you're allowed to have hana from it, but the essential reason why you're burning it is because of the mitzvah, and therefore that fits with what we said before, that mitzvah does not override Yom Tov. Okay. So the question is, Heichan Omra Torah, where exactly does the Torah tell us that you're allowed to, we're saying that Rav is saying as a factual statement that the Torah allows you to have hana from it when you're burning it. Where do we see in the Torah that you're actually allowed to have hana? The answer is Midr Rav Nachman, based on what Rav Nachman says. The Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Rav Balvua, Omakra, like this, you have a pasuk that says, "Va'ani hinei nasati l'cha es mishmeres trumoisai." The pasuk says, Hashem says in Parshas Korach, Hashem says to Aaron, "Behold, I have given you the guarding of my trumois." Trumois in the plural. So what does that mean? The shtei trumas hakasim medaber, meaning the pasuk is talking about two kinds of truma, achas truma tahora v'achas truma tmeya. One is truma that's tahor, which you're allowed to eat, and one is truma which is tummy, which you're not allowed to eat. But Omer Rachmana, and the pasuk is saying, "Vani hinei nosati l'cha." The pasuk is saying, "I am giving you mishmeres truma," I say, implying the Omer Rachmana l'cha. The pasuk is saying, "I'm giving it to you," implying shalcha tehei lahasika tachas tapshilcha. In other words, it belongs to you, in the sense that you're allowed to burn it for firewood under a pot of food that you're cooking. So therefore, that's one source in the Torah for the idea that you're allowed to have hanaf and truma when you're burning it. So the pasuk says, "Vani hino nasati l'cha." And trumoisai means the two kinds of trumas, the one that's tahor, which you're allowed to eat, which you're allowed to have hanaf from it by eating it, and the one which is tamei, which you're allowed to have hanaf from it by burning it.
I'm assuming we're speaking about a kohen, right? Thank
you for mentioning that, actually. I forgot to mention. You have actually a discussion of Rishonim on the point. You have a discussion between Tosfos and the Rash, which is also one of the Rishonim, where the Pirush on Mishnayos Zeroyim. Yes, we are talking about a Kohen over here. Are we saying that on the Daraisa level, only a Kohen is allowed to do this, and not a Yisrael? That's how Tosfos learns. Tosfos learns that actually a Yisrael would be allowed to have Hanah from Truma, where it's not Hanah. where it's not a hana that involves destroying it. Now, it's possible to have hana from truma without actually destroying it. One example is, for example, would a Yisrael be allowed to take truma and use it for an eruv chaseres, let's say, or an eruv tumin? So that's a hana that doesn't involve destroying it. So that's fine, a Yisrael can do. But Tosfos, in a few places, talks about that, yes, if it's hana tilu, if it's a hana that involves destroying the truma, as in this case over here, then midaraisa would be also for a Yisrael. The Rash, on the other hand, learns that it's not on a daraisa level, it would actually be mutter for Yisrael as well. Only the Drabbanon are we saying that it's off limits for Yisrael, and you have certain rules about that at the end of Mishnayos Terumah. So yeah, so we're definitely talking about a Koyan over here. Whether we're talking on a daraisa level about Yisrael as well, that's the Macholikas we're showing. Thank you for mentioning that. I was going to mention that, and I would have forgotten. Okay. So that's one source for the idea that you're allowed to have Hanah from Truma while you're burning it. The Boyz Ein of the Rabbah. Another possibility, another way you can learn it, is based on what Rabbah Bohu said. The Amr Rabbah Bohu, Amr of Yeshanan, like this. The Torah tells us about a mitzvah of Vidri Meisel. You have, at the end of three years, once you've gone through a full mini-cycle of Meisris, once you've gone through a full three-year cycle of Meisris, where you have 2 years Meisris Sheni and 1 year Meisris Ani, then the Torah tells us in Parshas Kitzavai, Kisachala Lacher Komachet Vos Kavashon Ashlechit, when you finished giving out all your trumas and Meisris in the third year, because you're allowed to. You're allowed to designate them and then keep them by you for some time, and then eventually the Aniyim and the Leviim and whatever will show up and take whatever they're supposed to. So at the end of 3 years, you have to have finished giving them all out. And then Pesach of the fourth year, you say Vidri Meister. You say a declaration that it says in the Sukkim over there, B'Av Yakodesh Min Abayis. And you say in that declaration that you followed all of the mitzvahs and all of the dinim that you're supposed to with truma, with the various kinds of truma and meister. So you have a pasuk in there, V'loi B'Avki Min Menu B'Tomeh. You have a pasuk over there regarding Meister Sheni, that you're saying, I did not use it in a destructive way, meaning for example, as firewood or whatever, when it's tomei or when I'm tomei, as the case may be. The outi can also mean include, and also includes eating it, etc., implying the word mimenu is a mute. Mimenu iatamavir, only Meister Sheni are you not allowed to use up while you or the Meister Sheni are tomei. Avalatamavir shemen shalkodesh shenitma. But you would be allowed to use up. You would be allowed to burn oil of truma that became tummy. The word minenu means that only this din only applies to Maaseh Sheni. It doesn't apply to truma. So we see from that, therefore, in other words, that when oil of truma or whatever food of truma becomes tummy, then you are allowed to be mevayeh. You're not allowed to eat it, but you're allowed to use it up in various other ways. So the question is, who says mimenu is coming to be my truma? The eva mimenu iatamaber avalatamaber shemen shalkodesh shenitma. Maybe the miut of mimenu is not excluding truma. Maybe it's excluding kodesh. And you have such a thing as oil of kodesh. For example, you have menachos that contain oil. You have, for example, a mitzvah brings a lug of oil together with its karbonos. Maybe the pasuk is implying that only when it comes to oil of kodesh, are you allowed to have hana from it while you're burning it. That's what we're saying, minenu, not from Maaseh Sheni, but yes, from kodesh. Who says that truma is? Who says that the minenu is coming to exclude truma and to say that truma you're allowed to have hana from while it's burning? The answer is the Gemara says lav kavah chomer. You can make a kavah chomer to say that it's so. Which is much more lenient. You have many things that don't apply to Maaseh Sheni, which do apply to truma. For example, as we're going to point out soon, let's say Maaseh Sheni zorim are allowed to eat, truma not. So madach Maaseh Sheni, which is more lenient, omra totally be out in men of truma. So yes, the Torah says that you're not allowed to use it up or burn it or whatever when it's tameh and have hana from it. Kodesh chomer like kosher again. Kodeshim, which are much more chomer than Maaseh Sheni, Because, for example, so Maisa Sheni and Kodshim both have the rules, for example, that you can only eat them in your shalayim. But Kodshim, certain kinds of Kodshim can only be eaten by a Kohen. You have, as the Gemara is going to point out, you have various dinim that apply to Kodshim and not anything else, like pigul and so forth. So we can make a Kavah Chomer automatically, even without the word Mimenu. We would understand that So in other words, we can't say that Mimenu is coming to me in my Kodshim because just the opposite. We should say that whatever applies to my Sheni as far as that you can't have Hanah from it when it's Tomei and you're burning it would apply to Kodshim as well because Kodshim have much more Chumras than my Sheni. So therefore, it's not logical to say that the word Mimenu is coming to me in my Kodesh. So the question is, Yehochi Truma Nani Le Makam HaChomer? No, and you could say the same thing about Truma. Truma also has Chumras over my Sheni. The answer is Hoksiv Mimenu. Okay, but the fact is we have a Miut Mimenu, so we know we have to be excluding something, and we're assuming that we exclude Truma rather than Kodshim. So in other words, Maisa Sheni and Kodshim, you would not be allowed to have Hanah from them while they're burning, but Truma you would. So the question is, Omar Isa, what makes you say, once you have just the word Mimenu in the process, and you're saying that based on that you have to say that something is different than Maisa Sheni. Both Truma and Kodshim are more stringent than Maisa Sheni in various ways. So why are you saying that the Mimenu is referring to Truma and not referring to Kodshim? The answer is, Mistabra Kodesh Loi Mamai Itna. The answer is, it's more logical to say that we're not going to be Mamai Kodesh. We're going to say that the same rule that applies to Maisa Sheni applies to Kodesh because Kodesh has a lot of Chumras compared to Truma. We have six things in which Kodshim are more Chomer Truma. So therefore, given a choice, if we have a word Mimenu, which is going to apply to either Truma or Kodshim, and is going to tell us a Kula, we're going to assume it's more logical that it would apply to Truma, which has six Kulas compared to the Chomeres of Kodshim. Simon Panach Achas is a simon, the initials or the key letters of six things that apply to Kodshim and don't apply to Truma. Number one, Pigul. The whole concept of Pigul only applies to Kodshim. It doesn't apply to, it only applies when you, if you shecht it, having in mind, or you shecht it, or you do one of the avodas, having in mind that you're going to eat it outside of the proper time, that doesn't apply to Truma. Number two, noiser, when you have leftover, same thing, that only applies to Kodshin, it doesn't apply to Truma. Number three, korban, the fact that that Kodshin are called korban, it's called by the special name korban, that has an advantage over Truma, which is not called a korban. Number four, me'ila, the whole concept of me'ila, that you have to pay back Hekdesh, Keren, Vachomesh, and bring a Korban Asham, or the Mezid that you get Malkus, all of that only applies to Kodshim, it doesn't apply to Truma. No, that's the Ayin, stands for the Ayin of Me'ila. The Chof is the Koreis, that if a person eats Kodshim when they're Tomei, then they get Koreis, as opposed to a person eats Truma when they're Tomei, then they get Misibidei Shemayim, which is, Rashi explains, the difference is, in both cases, the person dies, but the difference is, Koreis is not only the person dies young, but also Hoylech Ariri, also he ends up dying childless when it comes to Koreis. As opposed to when it comes to Misibidei Shemayim, then he dies, but nothing else happens. Nothing happens to his children. Okay, Tosfos discusses maybe Ariri only apply to certain cases of Koreis, whatever. Anyway, the point is that Koreis is much more stringent than Misibidei Shemayim. Al-Pi Kabbalah, Al-Pi Chiddus, so the idea that Koreis is the person, Neshama has actually gotten cut off from Elikos. The Al-Pi never talks about in Igeres HaTshuva, the idea that in those days, whereas in the times of the Beit Mikdash, where a Yid lived off strictly the side of Kedusha, a Yid's Chayus came strictly from Kedusha, then if a person got Koreis, then they would literally die before a certain age. That Tosfos discusses over here, whether it's 50 or 60 according to different sources. But anyway, nowadays, when we get our Chayu, nowadays, in time of Golos, We get our chayas from the Sabbath klippa as well. So therefore, it's possible for a person to be over on something which is chiyuv kares and still live to a ripe old age. Anyway, the point is, so that kares is the fifth thing that applies to kodshim and does not apply to terumah. And the sixth thing, the samach, is osur la'onin. That kodshim, an onion, is not allowed to eat them. On the day that his relative passed away, before the relative has been buried, he's not allowed to eat kodshim, but he is allowed to eat terumah. So you see, therefore, that kodshim have many chumras over terumah. Therefore, if we have a pasuk mimenu, which implies a kula that applies to one of them, that you're allowed to have hanah from it while it's burning, then it's more logical to apply it to terumah than it is to kodshim. The Gemara asks, adrabba terumah loimimah isna. On the other hand, we should argue that up to the contrary, that on the other hand, we should say that we should not be memayit truma, because truma has certain chumras over kodshim. Shekein machpaz simen, we have four chumras of truma over kodshim, namely misa. Number one, that you have a zor or a koyin who's tame, who eats truma, gets misa b'dei shemayim, as opposed to kodshim, is not necessarily like that, because kodshim, you have many, many kinds of kodshim, are mutter for zorim to eat. That's mitzvah b'nei shemayim. Number two, choymesh. Number two, you have, if a zor eats truma b'shoigig, then he has to pay an extra 25%. Then he has to pay the kohen an extra 25%. So that applies to truma. That doesn't apply to kodshim. You do have, if a person does me'ilah with kodshim, then they pay the extra 25%, but not necessarily this case where a person wears zor eats it for shoyim, because most kinds of kodshim, a zor is allowed to eat. So therefore, you don't have that chomesh. Number three, Rashi brings another possible explanation that some people wanted to explain, that chomesh over here means the concept that let's say, so we know the way the chomesh works is, let's say a person ate a dollar's worth of truma, b'shoigig, so he has to pay back the kohen with $1.25's worth of produce, which then becomes truma. Now what happens also if, let's say, the zor later on eats that 25%, then he has to pay back a chomesh of that chomesh. So Rashi says that some people wanted to explain that what we mean is over here that applies only to truma, not to kodshim. Rashi says that's not so. It does apply to me'ilah of kodshim as well. But the point is that with truma, it applies when the person eats it b'shoigig, whereas that doesn't apply to kodshim. Number three, truma has a chumra over kodshim, the eva pidyon. There's no such thing as being poida truma. Yeah, with kodshim, you designated something as kodshim, and ended up developing a mum or whatever. Then you're allowed to be poida and it becomes cholin again. Truma, there's no such thing. And number four, va'asura lazorim. Number four, truma is always also to zorim, as opposed to kodesh. Some kinds of kodesh are mutter to zorim. For example, toda, shlomim, maisa behema. So you have four chumras of truma compared to kodeshim. So maybe we should say that the kula of mimenu applies to kodeshim rather than truma. We're still trying to figure out how we know. Again, Rabbi Bo's drasha had been that since it says mimenu, we learn by Maisa Sheni, we learn from that Maisa Sheni, you're not allowed to use up when it's tummy, you're not allowed to have hanah from it, from using it up while it's tummy, but something else you are. We're assuming that something else is truma, so we're saying why? On the one hand, you're arguing because kodshim have chumras over truma, but on the other hand, truma has chumras over kodshim. So which one are you going to pick? The answer is the Gemara says Hanach Nefishon. First of all, the number of chumras by kodshim is greater. We have six chumras of kodshim compared to only four of truma. Six beats four. The Iboy Sema, or another thing you could answer, even if you're not going to look at the actual number of things, you could say kodesh chomer shekein onesh kares. You could say that the fact is kares is in and of itself is more stringent than misa b'dei shemayim, because like we said before, kares involved that not only the person dies young, but also also hoylech ariri, also that he ends up being childless. So that's much worse than Mitzvah B'Dei Shemayim. So that reason alone, the fact that Kodeshim involve Kareis, if a person eats Kodeshim when they're Tamei, they get Kareis, as opposed to a person eats Truma when they're Tamei, or Zori Truma, they only get Mitzvah B'Dei Shemayim. That reason alone is reason enough to say that Kodeshim are more stringent than Truma. Okay. So all of that is a second reason. So again, we had the first reason we said that you're allowed to have hanah from truma while it's burning is Rav Nachman's pasuk, va'anihin enasach l'chayos mishmeret truma itay. And the second one is this thing of Rav Abohu that we're learning from the word mimenu, that you are allowed to have hanah from truma while it's burning. Rav Nachman Yitzchok says, here's a third pasuk from which we can learn this idea. The pasuk says, when it comes to giving truma, the pasuk says, kiten loy. You should give the koyin truma. Now, the word what is the word loy adding? Loy means the loy la oiroi. From the word loy, give to him. Now, what is the obviously giving? You're giving to him. So it means you have to give to him, not that you should give him in a way where he could only use it for burning for light. This is where we learn the concept that if you have some produce, which is tamei, and some of the same kind of produce, which is tahor, you're not allowed to take from the tamei produce and give truma on behalf of the tahor produce. We learn that Rav Nachman Yitzchok is saying from this pasuk that you have to give him loy, you have to give him something which is suitable for him, for the kohen to eat, not just something that he'd only be able to use to burn. But the point is, the klal, the bas orehu, we learn from that that truma tmeya intrinsically is something that he could use loy. When you have a choice, when you have produce, which is tahor, then you should be giving that as truma, so that way the kohen can actually eat it rather than just burning it. But we see from that positive, we see from the implication of that positive, that there is such a thing as the kohen burning truma and having hanah from it. And if, let's say, for example, all your produce was tamei, then you would have no choice. You would give him truma that is tamei, and he would use it for burning. Or for that matter, if you gave it to him and later on it became tamei, he would use it for burning. So we see that from the implication of the fact that the pasuk is mentioning that you should be giving him truma that's not for oiroi, implying but the evad there is a case where he could use it for oiroi, namely where it became tamei. Okay. So those are three different sources for the idea that truma tmeya, you're allowed to have hanah from it when it's burning. Again, as we said before, Tosfos says that on a Zoraisa level, that applies only to Koyanim. The Rash learns that on a Zoraisa level, it is mutter for Zorim as well. Only Midrabanan is it restricted to Koyanim. Okay. Next, we said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Shmuel Oymachula, we said in the Mishnah that Rabbi Shmuel had said that you're not allowed to use Itron for Shabbos candles. We said that Itron is some kind of byproduct of pitch. So you have the pitch, like a tarry black stuff that you get from pine trees or other kinds of trees or whatever. You boil it down or you distill it or whatever, and you get a substance called Itron. Before, the Gemara called it Psula de Ziska, the leftovers of Zephes, the leftovers of tar. So Rabbi Shmuel said you can't use that for Shabbos candles. So my timer, why not? Why can't you use it for Shabbos candles? Omar Rava, so Rava says, Rava, I'll go to Bach changes it to, B'toich Sherecho Ra, since it smells bad, Gzeira, Shem Yani Chen of Yese. We make a Gzeira, we don't want it, Rabbi Shmuel is saying, we don't want him to use it for Shabbos candles because he may just give up and leave the room. So Omar Abai is Yese, Abai says, no, so what's the problem? As long as he lit Shabbos candles, what's the problem? Let him leave the room afterwards because it smells bad, who cares? Omar Lay, the Rava or Rava answers him, Shani Omer have locketh near the Shabbos Koiva. Because I want to inform you that lighting candles for Shabbos is an obligation. Meaning it's not just that there's a mitzvah to light candles for Shabbos. A part of the mitzvah is that covered Shabbos is that you light the candles where you're going to eat. That way you eat in the light. And that way you enjoy your food more. So it's covered Shabbos to be eating in a well-lit area. So in other words, Tosfos explains, Abaya, of course, knew there was a mitzvah to light Shabbos candles, but Rava, or Rabba, is informing him it's not just a mitzvah to light Shabbos candles, it's a mitzvah to the choyva, the obligation, is to light them where you're going to be eating. Because that way you have the pleasure, because otherwise if you're eating in the dark, you don't have as much pleasure from your food. Therefore, so it's important that you should have that the Shabbos candles shouldn't be made out of something where the smell of it is going to be so offensive that you're going to leave the room. And we know that, continues the Gemara, the Omer of Nachman Bazavda, the Amila Omer of Nachman Barava, Omer Rav, Havlokas near the Shabbos Choyva, lighting candles for Shabbos is a Choyva, is an absolute obligation, as opposed to Rechitis Yadayim Raglayim B'chamin Arvis Rishus, as opposed to a person washing his face and hands and feet before Shabbos, it's a nice thing to do before Shabbos, to prepare for Shabbos, but it's only Rishus. It's an optional thing. You want to do it. You don't want to do it, you're not obligated. V'ani oimer mitzvah. Now Rav Nachman bar Zavda or Rav Nachman bar Rava is quoting Rav saying it's Rishus, but he's saying that actually I myself, Rav Nachman himself is saying, I say that it's mitzvah. Meaning there's three different levels. You have this Rishus, which is something that's completely optional. You want to do it. You don't want to do it, don't do it. You have mitzvah, which is something you are supposed to do it, but the Chachamim didn't impose it as an absolute obligation. And then you have choiva, something which is an absolute obligation. So what we're saying is, lighting candles for Shabbos is choiva, and being able to eat by the light of them is choiva. Rechitzet, yadayim raglayim, a person washing his face and hands before in hot water before Shabbos, Rav is saying is only Rishus, it's the lowest level, it's purely optional, and Rav Nachman is saying it's actually a mitzvah. It's something that you should be doing, although the Chachamim did not impose it as an absolute obligation.
One question.
Yes.
This Chovah Midrabanan, in general, a Chovah of Rabbanan, you can have a Na'ah from it, whereas the Raisa you cannot?
No, what does one have to do with the other? No. For example, we just had a whole sugya about burning Truma, where you have to burn Truma that's Tomei, and it's the Raisa that you have to burn it, and you're allowed to have a Na'ah from it. You have certain cases you're not allowed to have hanah. You're not allowed to have hanah from Maizu Sheni when it's Tomei. You're not allowed to have hanah from Kodshim when you're burning them. And we looked before that the Chachamim imposed a rule that you're not allowed to have hanah from the Hanukkah candles when they're burning. But other than that, no, it doesn't depend on Daraita or Darabonim. However, this brings up an interesting other point. We have a Gemara in Chulin that mentions that Mayim Achronim is Chayva. Now, we don't make a bracha on Mayim Achronim. By the same logic, shouldn't we say that you don't make a bracha on lighting Shabbos candles? Tosfos says that no, there's two different kinds of choiva. When we say they're mayim achronim choiva, we mean because there's a danger of melach doim, and therefore the Chachamim imposed it as an actual obligation. But it doesn't mean that you make a bracha on it because it's still not the kind of choiva that the Chachamim instituted a bracha for. The Rambam explains that the idea is the same in general. You don't make a bracha on things that you're doing just because of sakana. The Rambam gives an example. Let's say, for example, you have, the Gemara tells us in Avodah Zarah that you have to be careful drinking water at night because there might be leeches in the water and you might swallow one. So let's say a person is drinking water at night and filtering out the leeches. Obviously, you don't make a bracha, asher kudishanim v'tzreis v'tzivanu, to filter the water. So the same thing, you don't make a bracha on something involving sakana. So therefore, the fact that mayim achronim is called choiva, fine, you're not making a bracha on it, but that's because it's essentially the choiva because of sakana. But over here, we're saying it's a choiva of the mitzvah of Oinig Shabbos, and yes, you should make a bracha on it. So we do. We make the bracha of Ma'adik Ne'er Shabbos Kodesh. Actually, the Velt says Ma'adik Ne'er Shabbos. It's almost exclusively Minna Chabad to say Shabbos Kodesh. Okay. The Rebbe writes in a letter that the Rebbe sins of Chabad used to say Shabbos Kodesh, so that's our source that we say Shabbos Kodesh rather than Shabbos. Okay. Anyway. The point is that the Neiris Shabbos are a Chayva. We're saying washing before Shabbos is either Rishus or Mitzvah. So continues the Gemara, my Mitzvah, in what sense is it a Mitzvah rather than Rishus? So like this, the Omer of Yehuda Omer Rav, Kach Hoya Min Hoga Yishor of Yehuda Bar Iloi, this was the Minav of Rav Yehuda Bar Iloi, that he would wash before Shabbos, and therefore it's a Mitzvah to follow what the Chachamim do. That he would, Erev Shabbos, Mevi'im Lai Areva Malaya Chamin, on Erev Shabbos they would bring him a basin full of hot water, the Roichet Pon of Yadav Raglav, with that hot water he would wash his face and hands and feet, Umisatif B'yoshev B'sidinin, Hamasuyotin, then he would wrap himself and sit in linen sheets that had tzitzis on them. Now, remember, tzitzis in those days still contained chelas, and chelas is wool. But we know that one of the exceptions where you're allowed to wear shatnez is for tzitzis. So that's what he was doing, is he was wearing linen garments that had tzitzis on them. The Dorma L'malach Hashem Tzvachas. And when he sat there before Shabbos, he looked like a malach. In what sense, specifically like a malach? The Maharsha says, because we find in the Gemara in Menachos that says that the malachim the malachim don't like it when a person is careless with the mitzvah of tzitzis. So here, where Rabbi Yehuda is being careful, extra careful with the mitzvah of tzitzis, and putting it even on linen garments, as the Gemara is going to discuss now, then in that sense, he's like a malach. Rabbi Levi Yitzchok, the Rebbe's father, talks about an interesting point in one of his notes someplace on the Zohar. He says that the word malach Hashem Tzvachos has the same gematria as the word tzitzis plus 16. Because you have four strings that you put in each corner of the tzitzis and double them over. 4 times 4 for the four corners equals 16. So the gematria of tzitzis plus 16 is the same gematria as the word malach Hashem Tzvachos. Anyway, continues the Gemara. Now, the Talmidim, when they would come to see him at that point, they would be hiding from him the corners of their garments. Rashi says because they were wearing linen garments that had four corners, but they didn't have tzitzis on them at all. Because, as the Gemara is going to discuss now, they held, according to the opinion, as we're going to discuss now in the Gemara, that you don't put tzitzis on linen garments. So therefore, but they knew that their Rebbe does, because they saw that he's sitting over there with linen garments that do have tzitzis. So they're hiding from him in the corners, so he shouldn't see that they're not wearing tzitzis. Tosfos learns differently. Tosfos learns that they knew that it is chayiv in tzitzis, but they held that you don't put tchelas in them. Tchelas is particular. Tosfos learns that linen garments do require linen tzitzis. However, tchelas, by definition, is only dyed wool. It's only wool that's dyed with the tchelas dye. So they would wear only white tzitzis. And again, therefore, according to Tosfos, they're hiding the corners from him because they were embarrassed by the fact that they're wearing only white tzitzis, where they know that Rabbi Yehuda holds that you're supposed to be wearing tzitzis with tchelas in them. Amalahem, so when Rabbi Yehuda would see that, he would tell them, Bonai loitach shenisi lachem. He would tell them, my children, didn't I already teach you sodin b'tzitzit b'tshamay kotzir n'matzilu l'chayvim? That, it's actually machlokas b'tshamay b'tzilu. B'tshamay says you don't have to put tzitzit on a linen garment. The reason is because, Rashi explains, b'tshamay does not hold that. How b'chalal do we know that you're allowed to wear kelayim with tzitzit? How do we know that you're allowed to wear tzitzit on a linen garment even though the tzitzit contain wool? We learn that from smuchim. We learn that from the fact that in Parshas Kisese, the Pesach mentions back-to-back that you're not allowed to wear kelayim, you're not allowed to wear shatnez, but you do have to wear tzitzit. So we learn from the smuchim that you're allowed to wear kelayim and tzitzit. Rashi says that Shammai does not hold of that drasha of smuchim. Therefore, they hold there's no basis for saying that you should be allowed to wear kelayim in tzitzis. And therefore, they say that once they say that it's potter, that once they say that you don't wear kelayim in it, then they would say it's potter altogether from tzitzis, because where you can't wear tchelas on it, then you don't have it. They learn they don't have a mitzvah of tzitzis at all. So Beit Shammai says that. Ubeshilo machayvin, on the other hand, continues Rabbi Yehuda, Beshilo holds that it is chayiv in tzitzis because they doubt in the smuchim. And the halacha kedivrei b'tzilul. And the halacha, as usual, when you have a machlokes, the shama b'tzilul, the halacha is usually like, the halacha is always like b'tzilul. So why are you not wearing tzitzis in your linen garment? Or according to Tosfos, why are you wearing only white strings in your linen garments rather than proper tzitzis with tchelas? Inu sabi. So, what are these tamidim holding? Why do they hold differently? They say gzeira mishum ksus laila. Fine, but they say yes, the halacha is like the tefillah, but we make a gzeira because what happens is you might have a garment that you use only for the night time. Now, the mitzvah of tzitzis only applies by day. So therefore, if you were to wear tzitzis that have shatnez in them, tzitzis that have linen and wool in them, then at night, then you would be over on the issue of shatnez without doing the mitzvah daraisa. So therefore, so So therefore, the Rabbanan made a gzera, and this is how Rabbi Yehuda Talmidim held that Rabbanan made a gzera that you should not put tzitzis in a linen garment at all. Or according to Tosfos, that you should put tzitzis, but not put the tchelim strings, because that way you won't come to accidentally wear the garment only at night and then be over on the issue of shatnez and not be yotze the mitzvah daraisa. Rashi explains how that Rabbanan able to override something daraisa because it's shev bar pasta, because the Chachamim are telling you not to do something and that they have the ability to do. Okay. Tosfos actually discusses over here, and so do a number of the other Rishonim. They bring from Amram Gaon that there were actually 6 cases in Shas where the halacha is like this Shammai, and this is one of them. This din that we're talking about over here, that a linen garment you don't put tzitzis on, where the Shammai is saying that you don't put tzitzis on it. Rav Amram Gaon says that this is one of the 6 cases where the halacha is like the Shammai, and you wouldn't need tzitzis on it. So Lamaisa, it actually says in Shulchan Aruch that if you're going to have better not to try to use a linen garment for tzitzis, because according to this it may not be chayev according to the Shammai. But if you do wear a linen garment, then nowadays you don't have chelos anyway, so you just put linen tzitzis on it. So that's what it brings in Shulchan Aruch. It's yesh omrim that you shouldn't make a palace out of linen, even though that's not strictly the halacha, because not everybody agrees that that is the halacha. Nevertheless, it's better to make a palace out of wool, and then it'll be chayev min haTorah without question. If you're only able to get linen, then fine, you make a palace out of linen and you put tzitzis of linen out of it. But l'chatchila, you should try to use wool and wool. Okay. Anyway, so we see from this story that Rabbi Yehuda, would wash his face, hands, and feet in warm water before Shabbos, and therefore we're saying based on that, it's a mitzvah to do that, because it's a mitzvah to follow what the Chachamim did. Okay. Now the Gemara is going to get it. Now we're going to get into a little agadah on the subject. The Pasuk says, you have a Pasuk in Eicha, V'tiznach mishalom nafshi nashisi toiva. The Pasuk is saying, my soul has abandoned shalom, or has been abandoned by shalom, nashisi toiva, I've forgotten goodness. So the question is, my v'tiznach mishalom nafshi, what does the first half of that Pasuk mean, that I've been made to abandon shalom? Marsha explains the point of the question is, up until that point in the Psukim are describing bad things that are happening to the Jewish people. Not that we lost good things, but rather it's describing, I've been set up like the Psukim are describing over there in Peret Gimel of Eicha, that Hashem broke my bones, he surrounded me with enemies, he's shooting arrows at me, etc. So why all of a sudden is the Pasuk mentioning something where like Hashem took away something good? So why, what is that? Amar Rabbo, do I block us near the Shabbat? And it's referring to lighting the lamp for Shabbos. When the Yidden went into Golos after the Churban, first Christmas or second Christmas or whatever, they were so poor they couldn't even afford lights. They couldn't even afford candles for Shabbos. That's the shalom which they were taken away from. Where the point is, as we said before, that the candles of Shabbos are meant to promote shalom in the house, because that way you'll be able to see what you're eating and enjoy it. That way you don't trip over things in the house. But therefore, when you don't have a light on Shabbos, then you don't have shalom. The Pasuk continues, Nashisi Tova, I have forgotten goodness. What does that mean? Rabbi Yemiya says that refers to that they weren't able to go bathe in the bathhouse anymore. It means something else. It means the ability to be able to wash your face, hands, and feet in hot water, just hands and feet rather, in hot water before Shabbos, which we said before is a mitzvah to do. So like this, when the Jewish people went into Golos, then they no longer had the ability to do that. So the Maharal explains that the first one, just going to the bathhouse, means, okay, a person goes and bathes, so now it means, for example, they're not going to be dirty, they're not going to be smelly or whatever, as opposed to washing his hands and feet is a higher level. It's like more of a, it's a thing a person does specifically before they eat. It makes them more human, so therefore it's like a higher level thing. So the Yechanan is saying, it's not only that they lost the lower level thing of the Beis HaMelechus, they also, the Navi is mourning the fact that we lost the higher level thing of being able to wash our hands and feet in hot water. Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha says a third one, Zumita Nav Kalim Noim Shalal. It refers to a nice bed and nice sheets on it that they had when they were living in Eretz Yisrael, and they lost that when they went into Gaza. Rav Abba says a fourth one, Zumita Musaf. This refers to a properly made bed, the Isha Mekushetes, and a wife who is dressed up and beautiful, the Tamar Chachamim, specifically that these are good things for Tamar Chachamim. So this is what we lost. These are among the things we lost when we went into Golus. Now, why specifically for Tamar Chachamim? Ben Yehoyada says a verse, because, not that it doesn't apply to everybody else also, but to Tamar Chachamim, the whole rest of the week are busy learning Torah. They're not able to be with their wives, and in fact, we know the owner of a Tamar Chacham is specifically on Friday night. So therefore we're stressing that the Tamar Chacham specifically is the one who was able to enjoy that on Friday night, and now he can't anymore. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh says a different verse. There's a story. The Gemara tells us a story in the Masechta Tainis involving Abba Chilkiah, a great tzaddik who they asked him to daven for rain, and rain fell. And the Gemara tells a whole long story over there involving various unusual things he did, which afterwards the Chachamim asked him about. One of them is that when he came home from the fields at the end of a hard day's work, his wife came out to greet him, all dressed up and perfumed and everything. And later on, the Chachamim asked him why. And he said, this way, I don't look at other women. So the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh makes a point that tzaddikim, sometimes tzaddikim have a Gemara that mentions that tzaddikim have a greater Yetzirah than the rest of us, called a Godol Mechaveru Yitzre Godol Hemenu. So therefore, a tzaddik like Abba Chilkiah, or the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh mentions it in connection with Yaakov Avinu, is more likely, if he doesn't take care to be attracted to other women. Therefore, it's important that his wife should work to should make herself as attractive as possible, and that way he won't be tempted to look at anybody else. So on the same note over here, therefore, the Isha Mekushetes is something specifically that Tamar Chachamim need more than most people do. Anyway, the point is, so we have four different explanations of what it means that Nafshiti Tova, what it means that we lost, that we forgot goodness when we went into Golos. Continues the Gemara, Tana Rabbanan, Ezehu Osher, Eze Osher, what is considered a rich person? Now, why do we need to know who's rich? Rashi says, this is, what should you be working towards? What accomplishment in life should you be working towards? Says Rashi. So the answer is Kol Shiyesh Lo Nachas Ruach Ba'Oshrei Divrei Rav Meir. Rav Meir says a person who has Nachas Ruach from his wealth. Meaning, Rashi says, it's like it says in Pirkei Avos, Ezer Osher Ha'Sameach V'Chelkos. So a person who is happy with what he has Nachas Ruach with whatever he has, whether it's a little or a lot, he is the real Osher. Marsha says actually it means a little bit different. Ezer Osher Ha'Sameach V'Chelkos means, of course, that he's happy with what he has. Nachas ruach ba'oshrei means a little bit different, says Marsha. It means sometimes you have a rich person who unfortunately doesn't end up being able to have hana from his own wealth because he's sick or because he's a miser and doesn't want to use up money or whatever. So when a person is able to use his money, when the rich person is actually able to use his money and have hana from it, then he's the real rich person, as opposed to when he has a lot of money and he doesn't actually have hana from it, he doesn't end up actually being able to use it, then he's not an usher. Continues the Gemara. Simin matkat. We have a simon over here for four Tanoim who give definitions of Ezehu Osher. We had the Mem was Rav Meir, and the other three are Rav Tarfon, Rav Akiva, and Rav Yossi. Rav Tarfon says, what's the definition of a rich person? Kol sheyesh lekuf kromim, a person who has 100 vineyards, umeya sadeis, and 100 and 100 fields, lekuf avadim she'ovdim behen, and 100 slaves who work those fields. Now, what does Rav Tarfon mean by that? You're saying that if a person doesn't have that, then he's not rich. But Marsha explains with this and with the next two ones, Marsha explains like this. There are three basic reasons why a person might want to be rich. Number one might be because he wants people to respect him for his riches. Number two might be because he wants to be able to have enough to be able to give his wife whatever she wants. And number three might be because he figures that when he gets old, or if he's not old, when he gets sick, he wants to be able to still be self-sufficient and not need to take the doctor. But Rav Tarfon is saying, on the first one, if you're gathering wealth, if you're trying to get rich in order that people should honor you, don't. Because you realize, even if you have what we just said, 100 vineyards and 100 fields and many slaves working them, etc., you're still not going to have everything you want. As you know the expression, yesh lemono roitza mosaim, if a person has 100, then they want 200. So you're never going to be satisfied, and people are never just going to honor you. You're never going to be called an usher. So therefore, don't do that. Instead, focus on what Rav Meir said and work on that whatever you have, you should have nachas ruach from it. Rav Akiva says another definition. Kol sheyesh le'ishana b'maisim, a person who has a wife who has good deeds, that is the real rich person. So again, Marsha says that Rav Akiva is telling you, if you're thinking I need to be rich because I want to be able to supply my wife with whatever she wants, realize, says Rav Akiva, that you're not going to be able to anyway. She may want more and more. Better, you should want a wife who has mice and tovim and does not look for luxuries. And then you don't need to become rich in order to support her with luxuries. Rav Yossi says another definition. It means somebody who has a bathroom nearby his table, meaning not nearby, like right next to, but in other words, where right after eating, he's able to go to the bathroom very shortly afterwards. And the point is, Marsha says that by doing that, he's not going to be sick in the first place. So if he's trying to become rich in order that if he becomes sick, he should have what to live off of, instead of doing that, Rav Yossi is telling you, you know what, try to be a real usher. Namely, that you're going to work to avoid being sick in the first place. So that's all Marsha's explanation of these four opinions. There's a couple of other interesting ones. Maras Chayas points out that each one of these chachamim actually is following his own way in life. Rav Meir himself was not, he barely made a living. The Maharaf Chayes brings from a Yerushalmi that says that Rav Meir would use one-third of the salary that he made for food and drink, one-third for clothes, and the third he would give to poor Tamar Chachamim. So we see he didn't want to be rich. So he was nana me'oshrei. So therefore, he feels that the real osher is somebody who was able to be like that, who was able to have nachas ruach from his wealth. Rav Tarfon was, in fact, very rich. He had a lot of fields and vineyards, so therefore he talked in those terms. Rav Akiva had an isha, Rav Akiva famously, we know, had an isha nor the bison. He had a wife who had very good bison. We know the famous story of how his wife sent him off to learn Torah and said, I'm willing for him to even stay away another 12 years, et cetera, et cetera. So he had the ultimate in that. And Rav Yossi brings the Gemara that Rav Yossi appreciated the importance of health of the stomach, and therefore he says that when a person is healthy in their stomach, when they're able to go to the bathroom shortly after eating, which prevents them from getting sick, then Rav Yossi feels that that's the ultimate osher. The Iyun Yaakov says a different verse on it. He says that it's not like Marsha says, where it's Rav Tarfon and Rav Akiva and Rav Yossi are warning you about the wrong thing. It's actually what they mean. Actually does mean that in a certain sense, a person who has these things is the real usher. Namely, he says, Rav Tarfon's definition, if he has 100 fields and 100 vineyards, etc., it means when he's giving meiser, he's able to give meiser very precisely. That makes him the real usher. that he's that the real usher is somebody who's giving tzedakah the way he should. Then when it comes to when it comes to the next one about that he has an ishana, the point is that therefore she's generous, she's a machnes orach, she urges him to have guests and she cooks for them and whatever, and that makes him the real usher. And the Beis Akisis, Samoch L'Shulchanai, he explains, is that we find a different Gemara that says that a sick person is the real poor person. So again, if he's avoiding, if he's making sure that he's not going to be sick in the first place, then he's the real usher. That's what the Iyun Yaakov says on this Gemara over here. Okay. So we'll stop over here now.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Yeah, thank you very much.